you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show exists to help you build a thriving creative career. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You could stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into it. I really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site. Anyway, go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. This episode is supported by In The Making, an original podcast brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. If you are trying to boost the YouTube, TikTok, Reels content side of what you're doing, one episode of In The Making that I think will be super useful to you is their episode with John Yushai. I think John's method for including his audience in the process is really inspiring. And if you want to hear about that and more about leveling up your game in the creator economy, just search In The Making in your podcast player to listen. Many thanks to In The Making and Adobe Express for their support. Tell your story exactly the way that you envisioned it. Go to wix.com/creativepep to get started today. That's wix.com/creativepep. Wix, what will you create? Huh? Hey, quick, really quick, super quick. Most of what I have to tell you will be faster than me telling you how quick it's going to be. I just want to tell you a quick announcement. If you go to creativepeptalk.etsy.com, here's what you can do. We've got some new prints, some new pins, some new jazz, but we most importantly have a new calendar, the 2019 Creative Pep Talk calendar. Here's the great thing about it. It will give you pep, episode art with inspirational pep on each calendar month. It might just be exactly what you need to hear in that day. Give yourself a present next July, right? You turn it to July, you're like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I needed to hear every day in the month of July. You can go pick it up. It's 10 bucks on creativepeptalk.etsy.com. And all that money goes into the pot of helping us keep doing this show. If you have got a lot from this show and you've been looking for a way to give back, this is perfect way to do it, and you get some fresh pep monthly in return. Go check it out. Thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's episode. It's an Ask Dr. Pizza episode where you sent in questions via Instagram. Every once in a while on my Instagram stories, I will be asking a question where you can submit your questions for an Ask Dr. Pizza episode. I look through those and pick a few that jump out, and that's what this episode's going to be. It's going to be a whole grab bag of all kinds of different topics. Hopefully some of these things are going to tickle your toes just in the way they've been dying to get tickled today. I hope some of them really hit you square in the nose with extra amounts of healthy amounts of pep and jazz. That's what today's episode is. If you want to be in the running to submit your questions next time, we got a whole mess of them last time, go and follow me at Andy J. Pizza on Instagram, and you can look out for those stories where I ask the next questions for the next time. Let's do it. right, the first question is a question I get all the freaking time, and that's why I wanted to take it, because I think it's a deal breaker, game changer for creative careers, and it's something we all struggle with. And it's, should I focus on a single path? Should I focus on a single path, or should I explore all my interests? And you can hear in the question the bias of the person asking it. It's a creative person who's desperate to just explore all the possibilities. They want Andy to say, and this reminds me of like Andy from 7 years ago, you know what? Just let your friggin' creative nature fly all over the place, baby. Don't hold that thing down. Don't try to focus on a market like some kind of weird business guy. Like, you got to niche down. You got to let that thing just float everywhere and just go tickle whatever tickles your fancy. You know Andy's not going to say that. Yeah, right. This is the Creative Pep Talk podcast where we talk about creative and career. And here's the thing. I get it, okay? I'm a creative. I see all the possibilities in the world. I love possibility. It is my super strength, and it's my super curse, because we see all these infinite possibilities, and the next possibility always looks more attractive than the last. And, you know, I joke, when I see a door and they say, how are we going to get through this door? My first thought is, take the hinges off, not try the handle. And I think this is the creative way. When we see a door, when we see an obstacle, we almost ignore the most obvious solution and we go straight to the next, you know, 2 through 7. We could go underneath. We could take it off its hinges. We could light it on fire. We could use a blowtorch. We could do, you know, all the different things that we could do to get around this obstacle. And all those possibilities can make us run in 10 different directions at the same time and end up nowhere, right? There's an ancient proverb that says, the man who chases 2 rabbits catches none. And I think, if I'm just going to answer this plainly, should you focus on one thing or should you explore all your interests? And the answer to that is yes. And the reason is because it's not a black and white answer. It's not you should focus all the time or you should explore all the time. I think it's more complicated than that. And I would suggest focusing for a season of time on one direction, breaking into one thing at a time. And then once you've put a considerable amount of time getting that ball rolling, focus on another ball. Right now in my career, I earn a living from kids' books, editorial illustration, brand illustration, podcasts, and public speaking, and some teaching sometimes. It's a vast ecosystem of creative potential as well as diversification of income streams. And it makes my creative self extremely happy. But the way to get those plates spinning is to do it one at a time. There's a theory from, I believe it's in the book, The One Thing by Jay Papasan and Gary Keller. I'll put it in the show notes, where they talk about, in order to get anywhere interesting, well, let's say it this way. You can walk 10 steps in a year, let's say. And you can walk in any direction you choose. If you split those 10 steps between 10 different things, if you run it comics and brand illustration and podcast and this and that and whatever, if you start from a place and you walk in 10 different directions, you can go one step in 10 different directions in a year. However, if you focus that energy, you can walk 10 steps in one direction in a year. And let's say it takes 10 steps in a direction to get anywhere interesting, which it does. It takes an incredible amount of effort and energy to master a creative act, to break into a new market, to get past gatekeepers, to get known for one type of thing as a business, a reliable, you know, service of a particular craft, to get typecast in one thing that you can be reliable on. It takes an incredible amount of energy, and you can spend those 10 steps that you can do in a year in 10 different directions and get to an interesting place in 10 years in 10 different paths, or you can focus on one at a time. And the great thing about that is, if you focus 10 steps in the same direction in 1 year, you'll be in an interesting place in that thing. And the thing I'm most concerned about for you is motivation and discipline and progress. Because if you feel like you're not getting anywhere in any of the directions, you're likely to give up on the whole dang thing. And there's so many people, that creative people, that go and run in 10 different directions at the same time. They do that for 5 years and they're only halfway in all these different endeavors and they just give up. There's like, I forget creativity, I'm doing something different. Whereas if you focus on editorial illustration all year this year, and you get a few jobs that way, all of a sudden, you've got new motivation, excitement, because you can see the progress. You know what I'm saying? So I highly recommend you do both. You focus and you explore all of them. You just chop them down into bite-sized chunks where you're going to focus on this one this year, that one the year after that, that one the year after that, and then eventually you're exploring all your interests, but you're doing it in a way that sustains your motivation and interest. The other thing I want to say real quick is that there are kind of two joys that come for creativity. One is the new, you know, like, this is kind of like falling in love, okay? When it comes to a relationship, the early days of a relationship, you have the passion and the fire. You didn't know we were talking about passion and fire when it comes to hot and steamy relationships. Excuse me, this is a family podcast, Andy. But when it's an early day relationships, it's easily, you're in the infatuation stage and it's all new and exciting and wow. But then you hit the messy middle. You start arguing. You start having fights. That's where the rubber hits the road. And if you aren't aware of the sweet fruits that lie beyond the messy middle, you're likely to give it up early and be like, I need to go on to the next one. I need to go into the fresh fruit, the fresh excitement. A lot of fruit talk sounds weird. Fresh excitement of a new fling. And that's what happens when you explore all these different territories in creativity. Every time you try a new thing and you get a little beginner's luck, you write a new song. You've never even written a song before. You write a song and it sounds kind of good. All your friends like it. You're like, man, this is so, I'm infatuated with writing songs. But eventually you're going to hit that rock. You're going to hit that obstacle where it's not fun anymore. It's just all challenge. And it's going to be easy for you to skip to now. I want to try comics or whatever. But if you do that, you will never taste the sweet depths of mastery. I'm about 7 years into my journey with editorial illustration. I feel like I'm just scratching the surface of mastering this craft. I mean, I'm just getting started and it's just, the depths are just opening up. And I'm so inspired by stand-up comedians because that's such a craft, that's such a thing to master. And the people that do it well, these people are practitioners of the highest level. They know mastery, and you can see when they talk about their craft, the levels of euphoria. And there's a book by Mihai Csikszentmihalyi called Flow, where he talks about this place where you get this level of mastery and challenge. And you're going to get, that's where like maybe the most true sense of happiness that you can find on this planet can be found. And if you just constantly are going from new creative fling to new creative fling and bailing when it gets a little bit tough, you will never taste the sweet fruit of mastering one of them. And it is I'm only getting started on a few of those areas. I feel like I'm just tasting some of that right now in a few different things. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Andy, I'm so thankful that you put it the time and energy to get to some of these interesting places. So I highly recommend having at least a few areas of serious focus if you want to get to that sweet spot. I got a lot of questions. This is going to answer a few different people's questions about time management. Obviously, time management is another massive issue for creative people. We're not known for our productivity and time management skills. And I'm just going to hit 3 points on this that have helped me. The first one comes from the book Essentialism by Greg McKeown. And he has this thing where he talks about chunking things down. And I've told you in the past, there was this time when I was on a kid's book deadline, and it was taking me forever to get to it. And I thought, man, I'm going to need like a month of working full time on this, but I'm already working full time on all these other jobs, and I just don't see any way that I'm going to fit this thing in. I'm going to have to take a whole month off and focus on it. But I, you know, this thing's not paying enough to warrant that. So what am I going to do? And then I heard this tip from the book Essentialism, where it said, take the most important thing you got to do and do it in the first 90 minutes of every workday and then move on. And I finished that kid's book in 5 days of just spending the first 90 minutes of my work. And that could be, that was before my actual day job of doing my freelance illustration. I was doing an hour and a half on this book. If you will take a solid block of 90 minutes and get the next thing that you're focused on done and focus those 90 minutes for as many days as you need to string together to accomplish those tasks, you'll be blown away. And it's this idea of chunking things. And this has helped me in terms of reading business books lately. I realized like I'm not reading them at the pace that I want. I feel like I'm, you know, getting stagnant about my reading. And here's what I realized. Every time you sit down, every day in the morning when you're reading in the bath, yes, I'm a big bath person. If you don't know that, you need to go listen to more episodes. I talk about it in pretty much every episode. Every time I'm in the bath, I have to read a whole chapter at a time. And if there's 12 chapters, I read that book in 12 days. That book on a regular, if I'm just reading it willy-nilly and kind of doing it by how I feel, I might read a third of a chapter at a time, and then sometimes a chapter, and then sometimes a half, and then get disillusioned and quit 2 months down the line. So I highly recommend chunking things down. You'll be blown away by just stringing together a few days of chunked efforts. Chunked efforts. That's a term I didn't expect to say. How much you can get done. B. The next thing I want to just say, I've worked with a ton of creative people on various projects, collaborations, books I've made, whatever. I got a secret to tell you about these creative people. They talk a good game. I'm talking top people in the industry, buddy. They're not so good at time management. I've worked with a lot of creative people. I hate to break it to you. The masters of this industry and of creativity, they're not that good at it. Some rare weirdos that somehow have the right, left brain, all that, all the bags of tricks, superhumans. Some of them are also good at time management. 90% of these creatives out here, they need email reminders. They need this, they need that. They need, you know, clear deadlines, all very, you know, we're a delicate bunch, a sensitive bunch. And so my first point on that is just say, if time management isn't your strength, you're not alone. I know all these people up here on the stages look so professional. They probably struggle with it too. It's not our best. And so my point is, A, don't beat yourself up. Keep working at it. You'll probably never be a master, and nobody will probably ever expect you to be the best at it. But then I would also say, this is where people like agents come in handy, agents and managers. I always feel like we always think, oh, if I get an agent and manager, I'll be so professional. I'll get, you know, they'll get me all these jobs and my life will change overnight. And really the best use of an agent and manager that I've had is just someone to help you stay on track, someone to poke you with reminders and help you manage your time and manage your energy and say, hey, I don't know if you should agree to this job. You already are in the middle of that job. And so one of the things you can do is say, you know what, I'm never going to be a master at that. Who are the people in my life? Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's an agent. Maybe it's a manager. Who are the people that are great at time management? And lean on those people. And then C, the last one that I want to say, is productivity, traditional productivity. A lot of the ideas that you can apply to that are actually anti-productive when it comes to creative stuff. So if you go into a creative session thinking, I've got to get this thing done, you're not going to be in a creative state of mind. Now, instead, if you go into that session, say, I've got 2 hours, and my goal is to have as much fun playing with this thing as possible, you will probably get some interesting results, and it's just a matter of perspective. So for me, when it comes to a project, I try to create margin to mess around on projects. Because honestly, if you are doing creativity as your job, you are getting paid to play. And when you make your play your work, and you try to mix that work, business productivity with creative productivity, you're going to get in trouble. Because when you try to make an execution, when you say, I've got to finish this thing in 1 hour, you're not going to be able to access the creative part of your brain, because that's the play center of your brain. And so if you will create some time and energy to mess around, to get silly, to get weird, you'll actually be more productive than if you spent the whole time trying to execute on serious business. I just want to add something to that last point, that I want you to know you can tell your spouse or your friends or your parents or whoever, your boss, when it comes to productivity, that Dr. Pizza gave you a prescription that said that to be productive as a creative sometimes looks like you're messing around. Sometimes my best ideas come from taking a bath, taking a walk, taking my dog for a walk, calling my buddy Kyle, you know, doing a bunch of stuff that doesn't look productive. And honestly, yeah, I'm kidding around in a way, but I'm also not. Is that a lot of this, like, I'm bad at time management kind of thing, comes from this intuitive sense that you've got to play and mess around and get weird, and sometimes creativity doesn't work like working in a factory in order to get the stuff done. And I want to give you a little bit of a permission slip on that. So that's the prescription. You can cash that in, take it to school all day. All right, third question is, should I learn new softwares like all the cool people around me are, or should I keep working on my own skills? And the way that this question was asked, I felt a sense of duty in trying to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, or trying to keep up with everybody. Seems like they're learning this new app or that new social media or whatever. And, you know, I am a big believer in growth and pushing forward, expanding your horizons, not being stagnant, all that kind of stuff. But I think that there's something going on here that maybe could possibly lead you astray. And I know that you're, especially if you get a little bit older in the game, I think there's a lot of pressure to stay up with the times, stay up with the kids. And here's my suggestion on this, and I can't remember exactly. I think this comes from Liz Gilbert originally, the person who wrote Eat, Pray, Love and Big Magic. And it's this idea that when it comes to growth, that I think you should lead with curiosity and not fear. If you are feeling the fear out of a scarcity mindset, I've got to learn that new program, I've got to do this thing, oh my gosh, I got to learn that, whatever. If you're coming from a place of fear and scarcity and getting left behind, I don't believe you're going to have the renewable resources of motivation in order to master that new thing in such a way where it's going to be relevant to your bottom line now or in the future. Whereas if you stay curious, stay interested, keep your peepers peeping, go out there and keep your eyes peeled. And when you see some new technology or some new style or some new process that is just doing it for you, and you're like, oh, I gotta find out more, go that direction. As you know, I work on the iPad. When we do the ad for AstroPad, I'll tell you a little bit more about that. I do a lot of my work on the iPad. Pretty much everything that I make at least gets finished on the iPad through AstroPad and Photoshop or Illustrator. But I'm doing something pretty counterintuitive right now. Over the past 2 or 3 years, I've taught myself how to paint a little bit. And I've been on that journey, learning some the right paintbrushes and tools and finding my way and finding my style and developing this analog part of my process, which in a way, if you listen to Fear, it's telling you why you should be learning 3D, man. But honestly, I found the best way to grow is to follow your natural curiosity. And so I wouldn't say as a rule, you've got to just learn all the new softwares. You know, three or four, well, let's say 4 years ago, no, six years ago, I know you guys are really interested on that timeline. I'm like, wait, Andy, don't you dare give us the wrong years. I'm trying to get it right. I think 6 years ago is when I started working digitally with the Wacom tablet and then eventually AstroPad. And that came purely from, I was doing everything before that, drawing my lines analog, scanning them in and coloring things on Photoshop. And I started seeing people using digital methods in Photoshop that were just knocking my socks off. And I was like, man, I gotta friggin' try this out. And it took me a year to get proficient in that tool. And it was messy. It was hard. The stuff I was making with it the first year was rough. But the only reason I had the momentum and the motivation and the, I'm trying to think of another M word just to make it real tight. Motivation. What was the other one? I don't know. The only reason I stuck at it for a year to get good enough to actually introduce it into my professional work was because I was obsessed with the results. And so here's my little analogy for you in terms of growth. Don't learn chords, learn songs. Like nobody picks up the guitar because they're like, man, I just love that G chord. I want to know the G chord, the C chord, and the D chord. They all just sound so beautiful. That's just like learning to learn. That's just learning the software to learn the software. No, you want to learn the software so you can make pieces of work that are exciting and fascinating. I don't care about the notes. I don't care about the chords. I care about learning the song. Find songs that you're desperate to play. Let that lead the way. Did that rhyme? That's good stuff. Next question, number four. I'm trying to change my work to be more authentic. How do I keep my clients while going through this change? So, if you're a creative person, like I said earlier, you're going to have infinite possibilities. You're going to fall in love with new creative flings. And a lot of that can be really beautiful things. I feel like a dad explaining birds and the bees right now. Sorry to be so strange, but here's the thing. I'm all about new. Creativity in a way at its essence is about the new, you know, something we've never seen before, something unexpected, something fresh. So I'm into it. And I understand that things can get stale in your work and you want to shift and change up your style and grow. And there are just seasons of change and growth. And I think that if you want to change up your work in any way, if you want to adapt your style or try some different things or break into new territory, whatever it is, if you are going to navigate new waters, I think the key to doing that and to getting the most out of it and actually thriving in business as well as creativity, because if you're trying new stuff all the time, your creativity might, think about your creativity as your arm muscles. And your legs are your business muscles. Now, it's easy as a creative weightlifter to spend all your time on your arms and be jacked out of your mind on your arms and completely ignoring leg day. You can't ignore leg day. You know, I'm a crazy bodybuilder. I haven't lifted a weight since probably 1999, but I'm told you can't ignore leg day. And that's the thing. In order to be a healthy business, You've got to think about the business and the creativity. And it's my experience that if you attempt to balance both of these things, they can actually feed into each other really well. And so as a creative person, I'm tempted to focus all on the creativity and all on my whims as a creative, where it's like, what do I want to do next? What do I want to do next? And I'm sick of doing that old thing. I'm sick of that old style. I'm sick of this thing. And just leave, you know, never want to repeat myself. But in order to thrive as a business, you can't sell pizza today, hamburgers tomorrow, sushi the next day, and expect to have repeat customers and build a, what do they call it? There's a book called Predictable Success. I've talked about it on this podcast before. It's by Les McEwen. And he talks about predictable market stream. And you cannot build a thriving business without steady cash flow, without having some hits, some stuff that people can come to you and say, we come here because you have the best hamburger in the city every single day of the week. You've got to have that reliability. And if you don't have that market stream, you're not going to have enough consistency to have predictable success that you can start saving and growing and doing all that kind of stuff. And so, what's my point? My point is you can't let arm day take over. You can't just let the creativity side run rampant and just switch to the new thing. And if you are going to explore new creative territories, you need to understand that it's seasonal. That if you're going to do change successfully as a creative career, you need to navigate the seasons of, if you're a farmer, you can't harvest when it's time to plant seeds, right? So here's what I think the seasons of new creative endeavors, what they are. I've talked about these before, but it's a good reminder and I have something to add to it, to the last one. But it's mine, refine, and shine. This is what I think. There's three steps, three seasons to if you're going to do a new song. And then even on a macro level, if you're going to do a new album, if you're going to do a new style, if you're going to break into a new market, that all have, in my opinion, these three seasons: mining, refining, shining. Mine is exploration. You go into the cave. It's dark. You don't know what's going to happen. You're exploring. You're experimenting. You're trying new things. That's the season where everything goes. There's no judgment. It's just fun. It's just play. It's just weird. It's just unknown. It's uncertainty. Then you collect some rocks in the dark and you take them into the refinery. And you start refining these stones and you see which one of them are gems. That's the refining, where you're taking the experiments, the weird demos that you did, and say, which of these songs actually belong on an album? Which of these songs need to be refined into something we're going to take into the studio? Those are the gems. Then the third thing is the shining, where you say, we've got the album. Now we're going to go tour it. Now we're going to go market it. Now we're going to go cash in on it. Now we're going to go take it to its full fruition and make, make the most money that we can make from it. So, mine, refine, shine. And here's my thing I want to add. One of these seasons is going to be difficult for you when it comes to new, when it comes to change. You might be the type of creative that finds the mining season really unpleasant. You might not like uncertainty. You might not like how weird it feels. You might not like experimenting because, you know, you're a rule follower. And, you know, experimenting means making some stuff that's not technically good, making some bad drawings, making some bad songs, wasting time. You might be a productivity junkie. And my encouragement for you in the new things is to say, I'm going to mine long enough to actually get some good ideas. I think you've got, Seth Godin says, you got to have a lot. The best way to have lots of good ideas is to have tons and tons of bad ideas. And if you are someone who doesn't like that uncertainty, I would encourage you to not rush to picking which gems to focus on, but to give yourself plenty of time in that awkward phase of creativity. The second one is the refining phase. This is where you're going to take something and you're actually going to work it out. If you're doing this, you might be bad at keeping things secret, keeping things under wraps. You might be the type of person that wants to show everything you make as soon as you make it. But there's all kinds of downsides to that, and I'd encourage you to notice that about yourself and let things percolate, let things refine a little bit. And then the last one, this is the one I really want to focus on because it's relevant to the question that was asked. And it's the shining phase. And I realized in my own life that I was getting ready to skip the shining phase. I'm not going to tell you what, because guess what, baby? I feed my children with the work that I do. And sometimes I got to close the doors and I can't admit everything. But I found myself in a place in one of my creative endeavors where I was in exiting the refining stage, getting to basically a finished prototype of a type of work. And as soon as I got through that, all the creativity kind of felt done. And I was like, all right, next. I want to do the next thing. I don't want to repeat myself. I don't want to keep making that stuff. I want to go straight back into the mine, baby. But if you don't sell those gems, if you don't let those things shine on display, you never make a pretty penny. And actually, your predictable market stream comes from the shining part of the process. It comes from the touring of the songs. And if you go straight back into the studio, you're not going to get the full potential. And I found that shining is the leg day. It's the business time. It's where I've actually developed a product or a service that's actually financially viable. That if I will allow myself to let those clients come that said, we love this work that we just got wind of that you were doing 2 years ago. If I will allow myself to get back into it, I actually enjoy leg day. I actually enjoy being in a state of mastery, being in a state of, I know how to execute this thing well. And so when it comes to exploring new territory, and changing your work, I just want to encourage you to say, don't change it too fast. Don't drop stuff that you've done, instantly. Make sure that you're being true to the harvesting, shining phase before you just skip on. And then if you've done your due diligence and you've really gone through the full process and the thing has really gotten stale, then I would say don't be afraid to explore new territory, because if it is stale, your clients are probably going to start feeling that too. And you'd be surprised, the best clients want to watch your journey. They want to see what, you're the tastemaker. What's the thing that you think's next? What do you think is fresh? What feels new? My best clients are the people that have evolved with me and have trusted me along the way. All right, fifth question. I've got a portfolio now. Who do I send it to? And then another part that came from somebody else was, what do you do about not hearing back when you're sending out your work to all these potential clients? All right, so you've got your album finished, you've got your portfolio, you're ready to send out your promos, get connected to people, and you send out 50 emails to potential clients and you hear nothing. Crickets. I'm not surprised. Here's why. Now, our culture is like this, becoming more and more like this in general, but especially in creativity, the only marketing that we are comfortable with, the only way we're really interested in hearing new things is indirectly. We all have, they say, marketers say like, we've lost all the gatekeepers because of self-publishing and the democratization of tools. Like anybody can make a movie, anybody can make a TV show, anybody can make a book. Like we don't have to wait on the record execs and all that kind of stuff. And that's true, right? Like the gatekeepers have lost some of their power and we've gained a lot of power in being able to just make our stuff happen. But actually, I would argue there's never been more gatekeepers in the world, because every single person's attention is behind a gate. And it's the gate of word of mouth. It's the gate of the seal of approval of some entity that's saying to you, this thing is worth your time. If the artist is telling you, hey, I got a new thing, and you've never heard of this artist, you're like, whoa, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see it. Please get away. If you're selling to me directly, you must be needy. I don't want to hear about it. And I think a lot of times that's how clients feel. They're like, this artist that's emailing me, it's hard to get excited about this person that's selling to me directly, saying, please work with me, please give me your money. But if the things, the entities, the friends, the search engines, the websites, the Instagram accounts recommend your stuff to them, this indirect word of mouth sort of becoming aware of your stuff, they're infinitely more likely to give you their time and open up their gate, so to speak. So what do you do when you can't just show up directly when you've got your portfolio? I think you do what Tim Ferriss did. Tim Ferriss, when he first did his first book and he was first doing that first thing, and the first thing that he did was first, I hope you thought that the podcast started skipping. I just noticed I was saying first and I started to go with it. But the first thing he did with his first book, I said first 70 times. I've got to stop saying first. The primary method, trying to find a way not to say first again. When Tim Ferriss came out with his book, The 4-Hour Workweek, he had to figure out how's he going to get this into this world that he wants to be a part of these speaker, author people in the tech space in Silicon Valley. What he did was he decided to look up all the people that he wanted to connect with and see which conferences they went to and just go be around those people. And he booked all these conferences be directly in contact with those people, but to be in contact with the people that were in contact with those people and just start being around them, start making connections, start networking with those people. And here's what I would say. The people you want to get on the radar of, you don't have to approach them directly. You need to be around the people that are around them. Here's how you do it. When I started my entire career, not by emailing clients, but by emailing blogs. Now, blogs have kind of come and gone. There's still some out there, but most of them have immigrated to social media. So now, what was blogs exist as curated Instagram accounts or podcasts or what have you. And so what I would do is I'd take that portfolio and I would take that album or whatever, and I would approach, where do the people that hire you or the people that you want to get on the radar, where are they looking for the seals of approval? It might be podcasts that they listen to. You can go, you don't have to just go straight to the top and go to a super big podcast. It can be the more niche, the better. Where's the super niche podcast that people in the product design space listen to? Go approach those. Get to be guests on those shows. Go send the portfolio to those people. They're looking for content. Go to the blogs. Go list 10. This is your homework. I'm giving you homework. Dr. Pizza doesn't mess around. I gave you a prescription to get out of school. Well, now I'm taking you back to school. Go to the top 10 Instagram accounts that feature things that are in your portfolio and go send them direct messages. Go send them emails, even better. And you know, give them some compliments that are genuine and connect with them and start making friends with them. They're looking for content. They're looking for things to feature. They're looking for fresh new things. You will be infinitely more likely to make a good connection if it's indirect. Go to the podcast. Go to the accounts, go to the Instagrams, go to the magazines, go to the blogs, go to the comment sections of the people you want to get on their radar. Who are they commenting on? Go comment on their comments. You don't have to do it incessive. You don't have to be a stalker. You don't have to be a crazy person, but just go be around those people. Okay, I think we are on number 6 here. And this question says, who is your best friend in the whole world and why is it Kyle Sheely? And this was submitted by my friend Kyle Sheely. Hi, Kyle. How are you doing? Thanks for the input. Great question. If you guys don't know who Kyle Sheely is, he's a buddy of mine. He's a creative person and a public speaker. He makes all kinds of wild and crazy projects. He was a guest on the podcast about 6 months ago, and you can go back and listen to all that. So I just want to give Kyle a quick plug because he's doing some really interesting stuff. And if you go to vikingfuneral.me, you can be part of his project where he's creating a giant, ginormous Viking ship out of cardboard that he's going to light on fire. And it's going to be the funeral. See, if you don't know, Vikings used to do funerals that way. They'd put the dead body of the Viking on this Viking ship and then set it on fire. And so he's going to make one of these ships, but it's not going to be a funeral for a Viking. It's going to be a funeral for all of our collectives, for a whole generation's regrets, things that you wish you didn't do, things you wish you could leave in the past. If you're interested in submitting digitally one of your regrets, go to vikingfuneral.me and submit yours today. That's Kyle Sheely. He's doing all kinds of crazy projects. Super fun, interesting person to follow, and a good friend of mine who often helps me get unstuck with podcast ideas and what have you. But I want to answer this question real quick. Who's your best friend in the whole wide world, and why is it Kyle Sheely? I hate to break it to you, man, but you are not my best friend. Everybody knows that my best friend is my dog, Maggie Figgins, and nobody has my heart like her. And you're a close runner-up, but you can't be the companion that she does until. I don't know where I was going to go with that. I was going to start mixing, like, till you do some of the things that Maggie Figgins does for me, but I don't want Kyle doing any of those things, like, you know, licking me on the face. Oh, Kyle, this was going to be good. I was going to be plugging your stuff. Now it's gotten really weird. All right, move on. All right, last question. Okay, so what do you do about a total lack of motivation and discipline on personal projects? So I obviously have a ton to say about this. I talk a lot about personal projects and the importance of your own personal practice when it comes to creativity. But I'm just going to I want to go to two places. The first one, I want to go simple. There's a Creative Mornings video with one of my favorite creatives in the world, Kate Bingham and Burt. She's a teacher out in Portland. She's also an illustrator, and she just got such a lovely spirit and so much life that she brings to this planet. And I just love her to death. She's awesome. So she did a talk about personal projects. She's also a big advocate for personal work. And one of the things that she says, one of the rules about starting a personal project for her is, am I going to die if I don't do this project? Is it going to leap from the inside of my soul? And if it's not, forget it. Don't do it. I use this test. Am I willing to trade sleep for it? I'm not telling you to get unhealthy. I'm not saying you need to sleep 2 hours a night, nothing like weird like that. I'm just saying, when I go to bed at night, is it as good as an alarm? Can I say, I sit in bed sometimes, I think, what would you get out of bed at 5 a.m.? What would you get out of bed to make at 4 a.m.? What would just set your heart aflame? And if it's not that kind of stuff, if it's not doing that for you, then don't start a personal project, especially at the beginning. Yeah, there's messy middle of a personal project where you just got to face it and have some discipline and get through it, but especially don't start a project. If at the beginning you don't have that flame that's going to get you out of bed, forget it. Because guess what? All these things we're trying to do in the creative world, these are the pros. If you think about it in sports, you think about it in basketball, this is the NBA. If you want to do this for a living, if I say to you, oh, you want to be in the NBA? So you really like to play basketball? Not really. I don't, it's hard to be motivated to get into it. I don't know. It's hard. But if they gave me the opportunity to play full time, I'd definitely do it. And to that, I'd say, if you won't do it for yourself, what makes you think you're going to want to do it for them? Because once you're doing it for them, there's going to be all kinds of other challenges to getting your heart into the game. Once you're getting paid to do it, once someone's giving you coaching, someone's giving you rules, guidelines, making you do amends, giving you feedback, what makes you think you're going to do that if you can't get excited to do it exactly how you want to do it? So my first thing to that is make sure when you start a personal project that you are on fire, baby. That's my first thing. Here's my second, and the thing I want to leave you guys with today that's on my heart. And it's tapping into some outside pressure. Do you have some outside pressure? You know, from the early days, I was making art in high school. I was making art for my friends' bands. So I had some accountability. And then in college, I had a few friends that we were collaborating, and we were also trying to outdo each other. Competition, you know, they make something and it puts pressure on me to make something better. And we just were getting into it. And then after that, it was online communities. There were, you know, web pages or what have you, where you're getting to that competition and tapping into that outside pressure. That's a good way of getting that ball rolling, if you can find some accountability there. But ultimately, I want to touch on a deeper kind of method for finding that meaning and that motivation that comes from meaning. And I want to talk about Viktor Frankl. He had a thing he called logotherapy that he would put people through to help them find meaning in their life. And he developed this theory while in the concentration camps during the Holocaust, trying to get people to get through them alive, to get through there without committing suicide, with finding meaning in the toughest moments. And he came up with this process called logotherapy. He writes about it in the book, A Man's Search for Meaning. And there's three steps, but I only want to talk about the first one today. The first one is find a project, find something for you to do that if you don't do, someone will suffer. And it doesn't have to be giant suffering like they were experiencing. It can just be just suffering, any kind of negative emotion on somebody else. Finding that kind of outside pressure will be the biggest motivator, and it will be the biggest source of meaning. And if you have meaning in your life, you will have motivation. And I know you're saying, I'm drawing pictures of apples with faces on them. What the hell are you talking about when it comes to finding, alleviating someone's suffering through apples with faces on it, Andy? What do you mean? Well, I want to talk about, I think my driving force since day one, the reason I've been so determined since age 18 to build a thriving creative career, came from my own minor version of suffering in comparison to the world's suffering and the deep tragedies. You, for me personally, I knew on a personal level what it looked like to have a parent that was unfulfilled, miserable, not reaching their creative potential. I've talked about it countless times. I'm not going to go into the deep details here and now. But, you know, I had a mom that really didn't have the determination, didn't have the wherewithal to do the creative dreams that were in her heart. And that lack of fulfillment, that lack of pursuit, I think was one of the reasons that she started several families and moved on and searched for meaning in other places, because she wasn't getting it in her projects. And I saw the suffering in my own life that came from an unfulfilled, miserable parent. And I saw like what happens when you have a parent that misses their calling. And so I was determined that I was not going to be a parent like that. I was not going to have my children suffer because I was miserable and unfulfilled. and I wasn't going to have, and especially I planned on being at least 50% of a provider for my kids and make money and be able to pay our bills and not make them suffer in any way in that side of the coin either. And so right from age 18, I knew that if I didn't figure out, because I'm ADHD and I am like my mom and I need to be interested in the stuff that I'm doing or I'm a miserable person. I'm terrible to be around. And I didn't want my kids to have to face that. And so all the projects I did regarding my creativity were, in my mind and in my heart, alleviating suffering. And on top of that, they were alleviating suffering for me because anytime I'm doing something outside of creativity for work, it feels like suffering. And then I want to just bring it home a little bit deeper than that. Because I think, you know, one thing I've noticed is if I tell, you know, I've been lucky enough to meet some of my creative heroes. And if I say to them, you know what, thank you for making the work that you made, it's made a really big impact on my life. It's made a difference in my life. Their response is always the same. Yeah, cool, man. Yeah, glad you liked it. That's awesome, man. And I just find that, you know how much an impact the creative heroes of yours have made in your life. You know the ways, in small ways, and then in large ways, the creative work has alleviated suffering in your life. Whether that's it's unlocked a moment of grief for you, whether it's marked a moment as a memory, whether it's taught you something about yourself, whether it made you feel less alone. You know, the work that's done today in the world of creativity surrounding mental health, do you know how when I find something that speaks to my own mental health struggles, that articulates something from a firsthand experience that says, me too, I'm like this, I get it. Do you know how much less alone I feel? I feel validated. And there are musicians in my life that their music got me through a season of my life and it made a difference and it made that life, that part of maybe a dull part of my life, feel special. And we know how much suffering creativity alleviates for people. And yet we can't possibly dream that our creative endeavors would alleviate someone else's suffering. And so I would encourage you, first of all, to reach out, even if in the comment section, even if it's email, whatever, would you, I mean, it's Thanksgiving week, time to be grateful, give it up, go out, and to the people that have alleviated some suffering in your life, even in minor ways, have given you some pleasure with creativity, will you go out and thank them as genuinely as possibly you can? Because it's hard, us creatives, we're not good at taking compliments, we're not good at believing that the stuff we're making might be meaningful, but we need to feel that meaning to be motivated to keep going. And I want to encourage you, make work about your mental health, make work about your life, make work about make creative stuff that gives a moment of levity. Make jokes. It alleviates suffering. And if you can really take on board that potential, you will find a well of meaning that will lead to a well of motivation that will be your biggest driving factor in making your creative work. That's our first, I think that's our first official Dr. Pizza episode. I really enjoyed it. Felt like a just good way to mix it up. If you liked it, let me know. However you want, Instagram or email or whatever. I'm better on Instagram than I am email at Andy J Pizza. Thank you guys for that. Go tell people you're grateful for alleviating your suffering. Minor and major ways. I'm sure creative people have made a dramatic difference in your life. And that's probably the reason you want to make creativity. If you want to give back to the show and you want to get jazzed for 2019, don't forget to check out creativepeptalk.etsy.com, ETSY.com, if you're not familiar with that. And there you go. Another show in the bag. thank you to Yoni Wolf and the band Y. I just want to say thanks to Yoni Wolf. Yoni Wolf and the band Y. The band Y changed my college years. The band Y, when I was in college, I never felt more seen. And actually, the music they were making at the time really helped me explore my shadow side, explore sides of myself that I was hiding from myself, that I needed to work through, that I'd repress, that I'd, you know, that I'd try to shut off, that I'd try to forget. And it was powerful in growing and accepting myself. So thank you, Yoni Wolf, for making that music. It is a deal breaker, game changer for me. Thanks for making that music, man. Thanks to Alex Sugg. You, my friend, have made this meaningful soundtrack, and you edit my podcast. The music that you made for this podcast, first time I listened to it, I was in a bathtub in, might be too much information, in a bathtub at a cottage in Staithes, England, on the seaside. I was at the top floor in this little bathtub, and there were seagulls in the background, and I was listening to this music, and that music, it helped me get present in the moment, and it helped me fully engage with that moment and alleviate the suffering of a racing, anxious mind. And it means that I will never forget that bathtub and the seagulls and the way that your music made me feel in that moment. And I am grateful for the meaning that you bring to this world through the soundtrack of the Creative Pep Talk podcast. I love you, man. I love what you bring to the table. Keep doing it. Stay motivated. All right. Thanks to all you guys listening. Until we speak again, stay pepped up.